Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Ford. Ford invites us tech geeks to join the conversation. Submit ideas and grab a tech geek badge at social.ford.com.
Welcome to All About Android, episode 77, recording on Tuesday, September 18th. Your weekly source for all the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. 18th, right? I'm Eileen Rivera.
I'm Jason Al.
I'm Ron Richards.
All right, good. Welcome. We got the date.
Yes,
right.
We got that right. So that's a good place to start.
It's all downhill from here.
I don't know what time it is. I don't know what date it is ever. Yeah. I'm really sorry, everybody.
It's okay.
Tuesday, September
18th. You nailed it.
Yeah. Thank you very much. We have a guest in studio as well.
That's right.
Not in studio, sorry, on the show.
What kind of in studio? Skype. As an avatar here, we have Russell Holly, mobile editor for Geek.com. It's awesome to have you on the show, Russell. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
With video quality like that, he's practically in the studio.
Yeah. I know.
We were talking about a pre-show. I'm amazed at his video connection. Verizon Fios, you're a lucky man. So.
right there
it blipped for a second if you missed it. So
we jinxed you.
As intended.
That was fantastic.
Great.
Oh, when it's important, it'll stream.
Okay, so this week we've got a lot of interesting stuff. I know. Did you like that?
That's good. I mean, it's accurate. We do have things.
Yeah. We have things and stuff to talk about that is all Android related.
Things and stuff and apps and products and releases and lawsuits. And
we should patents.
Why name them? Because we're going to name them during the show.
Exactly. If we name them, then we show a favorite. So really, we love everything.
So I've been showing. I've had some favorites, and I did put that at the top every once in a while. Like, ooh, and we're going to talk about the Galaxy S3. Yeah, I mean, blatant favorite. Anyway, we should just jump into
our
news.
Do it. All right. Could get a little complicated, but I'll attempt to do my best here. First, some background. Google's Open Handset Alliance was created back in 2007 and is basically a means of getting all the hardware partners working with Android to agree to kind of certain terms that will help push the platform forward. The company Acer, joined the alliance in 2009, and not much has really happened with the alliance that we've heard of in that's had a lot of press anyways in recent months. But flash forward to last week when Acer suddenly canceled a news conference that they were about to hold to announce their new Aliyun Mobile OS. It's an operating system partnered with Alibaba overseas. It's a cloud-based OS based on Android code. And I think what we're kind of realizing here is it's hard to put our fingers on exactly how much of the code is Android or, you know, if it was just pulled from Android or whatever. But effectively, it's incompatible. In other words, it's a forked version. And, I mean, the Amazon Kindle is a forked version of Android. I like how I think Google was calling it incompatible. And that almost makes it sound broken, and maybe to a certain degree it is. But so basically, the hubbub surrounds the revelation that Google applied at least some pressure on Acer to discontinue their direction with the Aliyun OS announcement. Essentially, as Acer is a member of the Open Handset Alliance, producing a version of the OS that is incompatible, as they say, goes against the terms. Therefore, if they plan on releasing this forked version of the OS, they would no longer be able to take part in the alliance,
which has gotten them so far this day. You know, like, what has being in the alliance gotten them? Like, what do they have to lose? Yeah, aside from Google support, of course. You know,
being a member of the alliance does give you some perks, right? It gives you, from what I understand, earlier access to some of the code. It gives you I don't know, Russell. What does it give you?
So there's 84 companies, I think, that make up the Open Handset Alliance, and they all pull together. These are, you know, OEMs and chip manufacturers and carriers and stuff like that. And one of the biggest reasons that they all come together is that they can offer each other kind of discounts, as it were, to create kind of a lower bill for the products for individual handsets. So the devices themselves are faster to market and they're less expensive to make.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. They also have access to things, and this is kind of another kind of growing part of this story, access to things in the OHS or OHA, such as Google's apps. You know, their apps are not necessarily open source. They're closed source. That's why if you're in the root, you know, and ROM kind of ecosphere or whatever, you're used to flashing a ROM and then finding a Google Apps package to flash, because Google doesn't necessarily allow ROM makers to distribute their ROM with the included apps. The apps aren't open source themselves, just the OS is. So Andy Rubin, actually, we might as well just go ahead and throw out the graphic.
Andy's
Andy
back.
Rubin took to Google Plus to put a word out to Alibaba's VP of International Corporate Affairs, as John Spelick. And Andy had this to say. Andy?
There we go.
Alyun uses the Android runtime framework and tools, and your app store contains Android apps, including pirated Google apps. He also said, if you want to benefit from the Android ecosystem, then make the choice to be compatible. But if you don't want to be compatible, then don't expect help from OHA members that are all working to support and build a unified Android ecosystem. Thank you, Andy. Thank you for coming on the show. We really appreciate you being here.
And well, he's really busy.
You can get back to your busy life.
He's one of the. He's always consistent in how he looks.
Yes,
I know.
Like,
the hair,
he's got the very unique way of talking.
Yeah,
you know,
he's
his
got
chin.
The great little backdrop and everything. It's great.
So I mean, this. Yes, he always has a blue backdrop following him. It's weird. So this is, of course, brought the question. You know, brought back the question that seems to come up regularly around Android, which is. How open is Android? I don't know if I necessarily think that this puts that into doubt.
There's been so much chitter chatter on Twitter from Apple fanboys are like, oh, really open, huh? Yeah. I mean, I've just seen it the last like several days, which is, I don't know. Anyway, there's another war we'll talk about after this story. But
Well, I mean, I think it's the sense of openness. It's the it's the idea that it's way more open than iOS, but there's still, and we've talked about this before with a lot of the phones, of it, there's still parameters and there's still clearly boundaries, and is so that Google can control, control in like, you know, maniacal dictator control, but have some, you know, ways to implement changes and control things. And when it gets forked, it's kind of like all bets are off. And so, like, I don't think this is really, you know, it's not, I mean, the terms and conditions of the Open Handset Alliance are clear. If they're in violation, then this is what happens for it, you know, and it's up to Acer to make the business decision. Is this deal with Alibaba worth making this change?
And apparently it isn't, because they've postponed their thing. And, you know, we'll see what they decide to do going forward. Russell, what do you think about this? Do you think this kind of calls anything into question, or do you think this was justified on Google's part?
So I feel like this is justified. But the interesting thing that I think here was that it wasn't justified from Google. This is an Open Handset Alliance group. This is supposed to be a group of companies that are all working together to, you know, kind of further these common goals. But Google is the only one that put the foot down. We haven't heard anything from, you know, Qualcomm or Intel or any of these other companies that are clearly involved in this same group. And really, you know, as somebody in the chat pointed out, you know, their hire also made it. And I think it's pronounced Alien instead of Alyun.
Okay. I wondered about that.
They also produce an Alien device, but what sets Acer and Hire apart is that Acer is also a part of the group that Google announced at I/O last year as part of the team that's, you know, supposed to be trying to get updates for Android devices out faster. So they're part of a deeper group who has access to Android code a little faster than some of the other guys. But really, you know, at the end of the day, This should have been something that was handled as a group, not necessarily just as Google. And I think that that's what helped set such a negative image for this, was that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a group decision. This was Google kind of, you know, knocking these guys on the head and saying, you guys need to toe the line. And that set a pretty bad image, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. It really does seem like something that should have fallen into the hands of the Alliance. And if the Alliance isn't making a big deal about it,
why is Google?
How much? I guess the question, and maybe it's not much of a question, is how much of a hand does Google have in the Alliance? Are they kind of putting it out there and allowing the Alliance to kind of take the reins? But they're not really, because they're kind of dictating the rules that surround the Alliance.
It's like
the Alliance, man. This just sounds like so sci-fi.
It's like the Emperor and the old Senate. He just was letting them, you know, kind of go through the motions, but really he had all the things. Yeah.
So, okay.
Bring it back to Star Wars. I did that last week, too, didn't I?
There's always a Star Wars reference. Okay.
There's a hook in there.
Drink if you hear a Star Wars reference on this show.
But it does seem very much like that, though, doesn't it? Where it's like, how much of this alliance is actually how much... And that's the thing. I'm not as well-read on the issue, and Russell, Jason, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but like, is Google technically like being the importance that they are with Android, or is Andy the spokesperson for the alliance? Did all the alliance, are they all agree, or Google just stepped up and made this statement, and everyone just staying silent, just letting it happen? You know, that it could be, you know, we don't really know what, you know, emails are being flown about. I found it funny that Andy's response was a G+ post. You know, like, he could have just emailed
to
it.
Them.
Yeah, he could just email the dude at Alibaba, but no, I'm going to post it on Google+ where everyone can see
I want everybody to see how I'm responding on this one.
And
yeah,
we know
that
how rarely he posts,
it's like he put a dot in front of the name so everyone will see it on the Twitter stream. So,
the big red arrow image or something. Yeah, this would be interesting to follow. Not a whole lot more to say. Do you have anything else to add on this, Russell?
I don't really think so. I don't know that anything else is going to come from this, but I think it really kind of it causes you to take a look at the Open Handset Alliance and see what's, you know, it makes you question what's going to happen next with these guys. I mean, the Open Handset Alliance was originally come together to take a look at Android, because Android was, you know, the project that was being worked on. But if Google steps up for things that are not derived from Android, it'll be interesting to see how that plays a part later on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right,
okay.
Fanboys.
Let's move on to fanboys.
Oh, God,
Week, there was a some kind of product announcement. In response to a new phone that is going to be released this week, Samsung has decided to, in some reporters' words, present an inflammatory new ad. Their ad talks about it doesn't take a genius. And I've seen these ads everywhere, on buses, just everywhere. Samsung is just out in front with some fighting words. And so essentially what they have is an ad that says it doesn't take a genius. One side is an iPhone. One side is the Galaxy S3. And then they break down the specs for each of the phones. And if you look at the Samsung ad, there's a whole, you know, array of extra features on the phone that they are saying is probably more appealing to you. At least that's their spin. So... they're saying that, okay, hey, the next big thing is already here. So they're just comparing screen sizes and resolution and various things like full HD support of this or that and the weight and that kind of thing. So you can make up your mind what you think is more important to you. What are you laughing about, Ron?
The last one on the iPhone side.
A totally different plug. Very true.
Which is true.
It is very true.
Yeah.
Versus the standard micro USB plug. So there's just... I don't know how many there are on the iPhone side versus the Galaxy S3 side, but, you know, obviously they're going to dominate.
Twice as much. Side.
Yeah. Well, in response, there was an angry Apple fanboy that took a red pen or decided to re-comment on some of the features on the Galaxy S3 side and add more features on the iPhone 5 side. So, you know, there's passionate people out there.
Yeah, there is.
And I think, you know, in some ways, hopefully it breeds, you know, the competition that we're looking for in sort of the mobile world. And, you know, take a look for yourself what you think. I posted this on G+, and a lot of people were either outraged or, like, thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, it's kind of a polarizing
What I love is that the responses aren't done. Like, I can understand, like, calling out a bully, but the responses are a little...
Yeah, essentially the Apple fanboy who defaced the ad has called Samsung a bully. Yeah. So it says, in high school, it doesn't take a genius to know who is just a bully. That's the... He mocked up the ad itself. So I don't know. I mean, I think there's always going to be one camp versus another.
Yeah.
This was Samsung's. They started the fight with the, with this ad that I see again everywhere. But you know, you have a choice.
I mean, I personally think that I like Samsung's aggressive approach. I tend to like a more aggressive, controversial approach to things. Admittedly, it's clear what side of the fence I'm on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in this Apple fanboy's response shows what side of the fence he's on, and also shows the level of maturity that iOS sheep fans have in terms of their their passionate defense of their platform. But the competition is good.
I just look at it as hilarious. Mm. And there's some points that are right, some points that are wrong on both sides. We'll say
on the iPhone 5, it didn't stop the world from turning with all of its great new innovations. It was just kind of, it's another phone. It's bigger. You know, like there was nothing where it's like, oh my God, it changed the world, and the hype and everybody running to purchase it and stuff like that. It just kind of illustrates that, illustrates the iOS fanboy kind of reaction. Or at least we stop and we read specs.
This kind of stuff exhausts me.
Yeah.
This kind of stuff, like I see this, you know, and I saw it all over the weekend. Of course, Samsung's going to come out with an ad that says that their device is better. That they're marketing their device, so that's important to them. And Apple would do the same thing in different ways. They had Genius ads that slammed the PC over the Mac. Yeah. So, I mean, both sides are going to do this. What's so exhausting to me is the fanboyism that surrounds this kind of stuff. I understand being passionate about a platform, and I am admittedly very passionate about an Android. I love Android. I also see definite benefits and advantages to the other side, iOS or whatever the other platforms are. But this kind of stuff, man, sometimes I see these wars, these battles, these fanboy battles that go back and forth, and the kind of the hatred and vitriol on both sides when all you're talking about is a phone. And it exhausts me. It almost, at certain times, I'm like, God, I don't want to do it anymore because I don't want to be a part of that. Right,
do you know what I mean? I can relate. I run a site called iFanboy.
Yeah.
And while it may not be phones, I sit there and we read everyone arguing Marvel Comics versus DC Comics. And they're not even real. At least the phone you can use to call somebody.
Yeah.
Like, for as long as I can remember, and everything we've done, there's been this decisive, bipartisan event, whether growing up in New York, Mets or Yankees, comics, Marvel or DC, phones, Android or iOS,
East Coast, West Coast,
Oakland, San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, it's for some reason it's our human nature to do this.
Oh, it absolutely.
People want this kind of Republican Democrat. Like, and I'm with you. Like, I don't want to have any part of it except that my phone's better. So,
and there you go, Russell. What do you think about all this stuff? Were you following this at all?
I was definitely following it, and I saw the response when it came up. And it's interesting because, I think that this is kind of a build-up from a lot of the stuff that's been happening, kind of against Apple across the world, really. There were those stores in Australia.
Oh,
They had the people come out with the big black signs that said "Wake up" on them, and they started. You know, they were picketing all the stores. And for a long time, people thought it was Samsung until Samsung finally came out and said no. It finally came out that
RIM.
It was RIM.
Yeah, that
did it of all companies. it's just this vitriol has been just kind of building up back and forth, and it kind of makes me concerned for what's going to happen next. What could be more extreme than the things that we're seeing here? And that's kind of where I think I kind of wish we could separate and take a break a little bit.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Everybody just needs a timeout. Yeah. But ultimately it boils down to, especially on the fan side of things. Now, I can't, admittedly, Samsung is poking the bear a little with these ads and those TV commercials they ran and stuff like that. But ultimately it comes down to everybody, especially in nerd geek fandom. Everyone just wants validation. They want they want to be told that the thing that they like is the thing that everyone else likes,
and they take sides like a team.
And it's the unfortunate thing is it's really a chicken and egg scenario. Mm-hmm. Like,
no, you can't.
You know, when you've got this kind of war being waged on both sides, so silly that it's a war about OSs. But when you've got that, like, it's impossible for one side to back down because the other side, it's like they're furthering each other's demise in that regard.
Exactly. And the thing is that, like, it's very much like my personal stance on politics and religion is that I don't like to talk about it because it's never a free form intellectual discussion about why one thing is one way and the other thing's other way. It ends up being one person trying to convince the other person and trying to change their mind. And you're never going to change my mind.
And you want to talk about two companies that have no business fighting back and forth with each other when they are not just you know, this kind of strange gridlocked mortal enemy that we see them as, they're also each other's customers.
Yeah, exactly. It's even weirder.
Yeah,
so has there ever been a fight that's broken out in between both teams?
Like,
because that's when it gets really
in
crazy.
An Apple iPhone
like,
line,
know,
Samsung
like when there was a Giants Dodgers fight, that poor guy, you know, that there's things like that that get really violent.
Luckily,
there
we haven't
been,
seen
right?
Luckily, there hasn't been phone related violence
so
that
just,
I know of.
It's a fighting, fighting of words is fine because then you defend, you know, the OS that you like the most or whatever. But there hasn't been like fisticuffs, right? Nothing?
No, I mean, not that I've heard of. But
I know, please, that's where it goes too far.
Yeah, yeah. Let's move on before somebody else.
Let's
do. Is
that it on the Samsung side of things?
I think so. Yeah. We're done.
We're done. All right. Cool.
I think we're done.
So
we're done enough.
Yeah, we're done enough.
All right, we've done enough. So, but we do have a. Is this a voicemail from somebody about old devices and new ROMs?
It is Jerry Davis.
Let's hear what Jerry's got to say.
Hey, team. This is Jerry Davis, longtime watcher, first time caller in. I'd like to make a comment on the ICS ROMs for the older generation phones. You said that it would be a terrible experience on the older phones. I just have to say, I've got an OG Evo running CM10, and it's a better experience than my Samsung Transform Ultra running CM10. Thanks for... Let me call in, guys. Bye.
Transform Ultra.
You're welcome.
I've never heard of that. Thank you.
We let you call, Jerry. Yeah,
no.
Well, no,
thank
but
you
the
for
Evo,
calling.
The Evo was a good handset. I mean, the Evo was a decent one. I mean, I wonder whether he could install that on an old G1. I mean, I think that's more what we were talking about.
And the Samsung Transform Ultra is a $159 phone, no contract. I don't know if that means – well, that must mean that that's its price and it's unsubsidized. So that, I mean, would – be a low, definitely a low end phone from what I can tell. But yeah, and CM10 is not ice cream sandwich, that's actually Jelly Bean. So, you know, that's even further.
It's even further. Yeah, it's great that it runs on it. So
But yeah, I'm really curious though, just because I started my Android conquest on the Motorola Droid, I'd be really curious to see what a Motorola Droid running Jelly Bean would actually perform like. I have to imagine not very well because I pushed that to the limit and I think I got it up to. I mean, well, it would have been Jelly Bean, or sorry, it would have been Gingerbread.
I should dust off my G1. I wonder where it is. We should
do
see what we could do.
Do
it.
Bring it in totally. And do it. Yeah.
I'm very
curious
about that. Just out of curiosity, Russell, what phone do you use?
Oh, so I have a Galaxy Nexus as my daily driver, but right now I'm actually using the Razer M.
Oh.
Okay. What are you thinking about that? How do you like that?
I'm pleasantly surprised by the direction Motorola is taking in kind of staying out of Google's way with stock Android, but still, you know, kind of sneaking in their own improvements. It doesn't feel like a complete overhaul like we see with HTC and Samsung. Mm-hmm. These guys, you know, when you pick up the phone, it really kind of feels like a stock experience. And then, you know, you kind of get optimizations as you go through. But things like folders work exactly the same. The launcher works exactly the same. The drop, you know, the drawer, you know, the whole experience feels just ever so slightly out of phase with stock Android. And that made me really happy because I've been a Nexus user for a while.
Mm-hmm. Has the edge-to-edge screen kind of won you over at all? Like, is that a big deal?
I like that it, you know, the whole phone kind of feels like it fits in my hand, and that there's not a lot of there's not a lot of bezel. The phone feels nice and thin when compared to my Galaxy Nexus. My Galaxy Nexus, you know, didn't always fit in just one hand, and so not having that bezel really makes the phone feel a lot smaller than it is. And it's been a nice change of pace.
Is the M a 4.3? How big is the M?
Yes, it's a 4.3.
Yeah, that's the sweet spot, I think.
4.3, yeah.
4.3 to me. Yeah, yeah. That's the Galaxy S2 is.
Yeah, I was just comparing the feel of my Galaxy Nexus to the S3. Or is it the S2?
No, this is the S3. Yeah. Right, yeah, it's a little fatter. Yeah. It's 4.8, and then yours is 4.7, 4.6.
But I have big paws, so, yeah.
You do have big paws.
I do. Yeah, 4.3 is interesting. I mean, I don't know. I thought I would have a hard time with this, and it was funny because I dug up my Galaxy S, my Nexus S, to pull some data off of it, and I was like, "Oh, this is tiny," and that's and that's 4.3, right? Yeah, or what was that 4?
I don't remember.
I think it was 4.3, I think.
Yeah, it felt like a toy. It felt like, I mean, admittedly, the plastic. I mean, I forgot that this was my everyday phone, but I'm like, oh, this is tiny. Like, I didn't realize how much I've gotten accustomed to the 4.6.
The 4-inch, yeah.
Yeah.
So. That's what it is. One quick question before I move on as far as the Motorola M and the skin. Does Motorola still do that thing where when you want to drag an app from the drawer onto the screen, you have to drag it over and then place it? And then click it again and move it? Or can you just do it?
No. It feels very much like it works exactly the same way as it does in normal Jelly Bean.
That always bugged me about the Moto skin. It's interesting because that used to be the skin that I hated the most. And now it seems like they've kind of peeled it back.
Yeah, I mean, I was exactly the same way. Of the three skins, that was my least favorite. But now it feels the closest to stock, and there's not a lot of just extra stuff. The Galaxy S3 is a really nice phone. But it really just doesn't even feel like Android sometimes. There's so much other stuff on top.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. All right, well, let's take a quick break and pay some bills. We'll thank our sponsor, Ford. Leo and Iaz actually spoke with one of Ford's leading technologists, Jim Bukowski, about his views on the future of technologies in vehicles. And some of the things that they discussed were kind of cool. New categories of apps coming to the Sync platform, location-based services, finding friends, financial service apps, also lane departure warning, lane centering features using onboard cameras, using the cloud to do things like seamlessly connect information and services used in the home vehicle as well as the office. And Ford Social is one of the ways to develop and surface those ideas to the engineering team, actually, at Ford. It's a place where people like you can go to post ideas that you have to Ford directly. The URL is social.ford.com, and there's just a ton of ideas that you can find on there. You know, the Ford Ranger was my favorite truck for the last 15 years. The F-150 is too large for my lifestyle and also my garage, the Ranger. You know, a lot of people kind of reviewing the vehicles as well as kind of giving ideas like solar panel, a solar panel on the roof, sunroof to charge the batteries on cars that run on batteries. That would be pretty darn sweet. You can just read through a lot of these different ideas that people are submitting. And if you have ideas for ways that Ford can improve their vehicle technology, you can submit those ideas as well. There's also, they have a bunch of articles on there interviewing different people. You might recognize one person. His name is Leo...
Laporte.
That yes. Guy? Yes, he was interviewed for the site, so you can read. There he is. Known as tech pundit Leo Laporte, sharing his insights on Sync. So you can find a lot of different people kind of giving their insight on the Sync experience and just different ways that Ford is working to improve the technology inside your vehicle and kind of pushing that effort forward. So why don't you check out social.ford.com. You can read more about all the stuff I've talked about. Submit your own ideas to Ford. You can even like your favorite ideas. And if you're a badge-aholic, you can go there and you can get a Tech Geek badge while you're there, as well as a bunch of other badges that you can do as you're kind of participating more.
Oh, people love the badges.
Yes, they do.
Gamification.
That's right. That's all at social.ford.com. That's all you need to know. Go there, social.ford.com. And we thank Ford so much for their support of All About Android and the TWiT Network. You guys are awesome. Thank you. All right, let's jump into hardware. All right,
speaking of Motorola,
I want a video of you jumping into a pool of hardware, just like Uncle Scrooge in the money bin, but it's all phones.
Okay, I'll work on that.
Sorry. All right, Motorola.
I need access to a pool and a camera crew.
We can make that happen.
Okay.
All right. Have a pool.
Piece of cake. Excellent.
Can we drain it? Can we drain it and fill it with phones
in the winter?
This will be interesting. Yes, I'm down, by the way.
Right,
cool. So let's go back to Motorola. We were talking a little bit before the ad break about Motorola. Motorola also had some news this week. So last week, you know, they announced all the Razors and everything. I think that was last week, right?
Yeah.
Am I getting my weeks confused?
A couple weeks ago, I think.
Okay, yeah. They all seem to run together at this point.
HD Razor, and HD Razor Max.
Yes, and the Razor M, as we were talking.
Which we're talking about.
Today,
this was in London, so...
Right. It was this morning when I woke up, the news was hitting.
Yesterday for them.
Officially unveiled their first Android device powered by Intel. Motorola is kind of Intel's biggest partner in smartphones right now. and Intel is trying to kind of make a splash in Android. The Razer I, as they call it, lowercase I, good thing they didn't put that I on the other side of the word Razer, has the same body as the Razer M. It's a 4.3-inch screen and all that, and more or less the same specs as well, except, of course, the important part, for the Intel 2 gigahertz Medfield single-core chip. Now, they tout the hyper-threading that they say actually makes up for the lack of multi-core processing. There is no Chrome browser included, and it's later in the day kind of come out that you can't even install, you can install Chrome on there, but it doesn't run. And Google has confirmed that they are working to tweak Chrome so that it'll work on the Intel chip. I think that's a compatibility issue. Android Central was able to glean that earlier today. Engadget put the phone through a number of benchmarking tests, and though the Medfield chip is actually fully capable and actually bests the Razer M in browser performance, it lags in nearly every other way as compared to the M's dual-core Snapdragon S4 1.5 gigahertz processor. But overall, it sounds like it performed reasonably well. What else about this phone? The camera was a big talking point. They said the Razer I has a startup time for the camera app of 1 second. So if launching that camera app is really important to you.
Well, we've been really critical of Motorola phone cameras for a while. So
Yeah. Performance on their cameras, absolutely. Yeah. And also 10 frames per second of shooting capability.
Okay.
Wow. Which, that's a lot of frames. Not that you're going to be, necessarily always capturing sports and everything, but it's nice. That gives you an indication of the speed of operation. And it also includes a hardware shutter button, something that I got very used to on my old Motorola Droid. That. You don't see those anymore.
You don't.
So this phone is available in October in the UK, France, Germany, Brazil, Argentina, and Mexico. No word, as far as I know, on US release, if at all. But I don't know. What do you think? Like,
because we have the
What's the big deal with Intel on Android? Why all the hubbub?
It's new.
It's x86.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's taking Android to the x86 system, which opens up a lot of doors to a lot of other things, and kind of an interesting kind of playback on what you were saying earlier, the benchmarks. I don't think any of those benchmarks, AnTuTu or any of those, are optimized for x86. So I'm not really sure that any of those benchmarks have any kind of relevance, because they're set up for the processors that we're used to seeing in Android devices, and not for the typical x86 architecture that we see with computers.
Okay, interesting. So it's almost like using the wrong tool to rate performance.
Yeah.
Of course, it's going to perform better on something that's fully compatible with it. It's an interesting thing to think about. Using this different chip, I guess it's very similar. And correct me if I'm wrong, to the use of the Tegra 3, where in the early portion, earlier times when Tegra was just starting to kind of hit the phones, there were certain apps that only run Tegra, and maybe even still there are certain apps that only run on Tegra. So it's kind of the same thing. It kind of breaks it up a little bit, though. How as a user how do you navigate that as a user?
I mean, for the layman, I don't think you can. I mean, you can. I mean, that's what
hopefully the Play Store siphons it out for you.
Yeah, what happens is that it's not compatible to your device or whatever. But like that, but for I can't imagine being the average person, and I get my phone and I hear about this app that my friend has, and I get to it, it's like, oh, it's because this app isn't compatible with your processor. And it's like, well, what? I don't even know what Tegra means. What is that? So like the processor fragmentation is really the most worrisome of all the fragmentations, I think, because the average user really has little to know. It's not everyday knowledge.
And these are problems that Windows had back in Windows 95. I mean, where NVIDIA, it's kind of like the same thing all over again. NVIDIA, they would release all these commercials and say these games only work if you've got the NVIDIA chipset with your game platform. Mm-hmm. And it took Windows a long time to get over that. But I think that that there needs to be some really quick resolution for that very same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, even Mac OS X had the problem when they switched over to the Intel processors. Like just the other day, I was looking for some app, and it didn't run on an Intel processor because it was an old, unupdated. But I was like, oh crap, I need this. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's unfortunate.
Well, speaking of Motorola, still, Russell, you wrote an article about Motorola's awesome developer edition devices, right? Oh. What's the deal here?
So, I mean, you know, it's every nerd's, you know, dream to be able to take your phone and crack it open and, you know, flash a bootloader, have some fun with it, put a ROM on there. And there's a disconnect. You know, obviously these guys, you know, they've run into issues with carriers. And so, you know, a lot of these companies are trying to find ways around it. HTC has had their unlock system for a while now. And with the Razer devices, Motorola announced the developer edition for each one of the devices that they announced. So the Razer M, the Max HD, and the Razer HD are all getting developer editions that are going to come out later on. And the price sounded about right. You know, it's $549 for the Razer M, which is about what you would pay for it if you were to buy it outright from Verizon. But if you go to unlock the bootloader on this developer edition of the phone, you still lose your warranty. And it says really clearly in Motorola's text that even if something happens that's not related to unlocking the bootloader, they're still not going to cover it, which is just this weird kind of backstab.
Why is so it then a what's developer? The point? What's the point of having a developer edition? I don't understand.
That's just backwards. Yeah. That doesn't make any sense at all. Yeah, and I mean, HTC, they made a commitment to opening up their bootloaders and giving tools for those things. And more or less, they've kind of stuck to that commitment without requiring you to necessarily, in all cases anyways, maybe they have a developer edition phone that I can't remember right now. But I mean, for the most part, if you have an HTC phone that's relatively recent, you're probably going to end up with the ability to be able to open it up through their tool. Right. If this cancels a warranty, it's like, why even do it then? What's
exactly
the point?
And I've yet to be able to get an answer from Motorola about what makes this a developer edition if it works the exact same way as every other phone they sell. But it's just, you know, it's weird, first of all, that you have to use a tool to unlock the bootloader if it's a developer edition. You know, we've got tools like Fastboot, you know, for the Nexus systems. We should be able to use really similar tools if you're going to sell something branded as a developer edition. It just kind of feels like they had a really good idea, and then their legal team kind of said, well, we're going to do it another way.
Not surprising with these corporate cultures, especially when someone like Motorola, it's been around for a long time. I mean, this could be a legacy decision that, you know, I'm sure there's somebody at Motorola banging their fist on the table saying, no, we shouldn't do this, but there's probably somebody above them saying no. So
I would hope somebody there is saying we shouldn't do this because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. All right, so apparently I'm on the LG beat. So
I pull these stories and I put RR on the
LG beat. So if you are at home waiting for the latest from LG, we've been talking a lot about their the Optimus Voo and the odd shaped phone and the phablet, but
and whether or not people use them,
right? Exactly. But recently, we got finally got a look at their new flagship phone. There was an event in Korea, I believe, Seoul, Korea, where people got their hands on the LG Optimus G. And so first time we got to actually see it and hold it, and both The Verge and Engadget had some great photos of hands-on with it. This is so it's running Android 4.0. It's got a quad-core Snapdragon S4 Pro processor, 4.7-inch for Eileen because she likes the big phones, running at a 1280 by 768 resolution. It's got an IPS display, which is very – it was thought to be very similar to the screens that are in the iPhone, but it's actually not exactly the same, slightly different. But it's supposed to be a super interesting, super really nice-looking display. LTE, 32-gig storage, 2-gig of RAM, NFC, 13-megapixel camera, and a big old fat battery on there. So looks like LG's is stepping up to the plate. They got a phone, so if you're in Korea,
it's not a bad looking phone either.
Non-removable.
It's got a nice kind of minimal quality to it.
Yeah, but you know what's funny is that I'm adamant about having phones with removable batteries. Ask me how many times I've changed my battery. Zero.
But knowing that you can.
Yeah, I never remember.
Yeah, but if you never do, then
I never remember to order one.
Anyway, well,
this is nice. It's thin. This is you might want
to. You may not ever replace your battery, but how often do you feel the need to pull it for something?
Actually, surprisingly, I haven't done that in like a year. Like it's ever since the Galaxy Nexus, I haven't done that once. So, because I'm glad because it's a pain in the butt to get this back thing off and back on. Like the
because I have a replacement battery, I've gotten very, very good at taking that thing off and putting it back on.
But, anyway, so there's your latest from LG. So you LG fanboys, I'm here for you.
All right. You've got the rest of the LG stories ever. Okay, Ron?
I
is
do.
That
apparently,
cool? Okay.
Apparently, I love LG.
All right.
Maybe they'll send me a phone. Send me an Optimus.
Well, I'm the one that dissed it, so I can't.
I know. Yeah. I'm Samsung. You're journalistically ethically can't cover it because you're biased.
I am biased. So I am never neutral. Mind. But in my bias, I will still talk about HTC. Now, there is. There's been many trends of, you know, sort of trading your phone and getting money back to get a specific hardware manufacturer phone. Well, HTC also has a website that you could possibly do that called htctradeup.com. And, you know, you can go to Gazelle, you can go to various places and trade in your old hardware. But you could also, you know, get money back from HTC and, you know, put it towards a new HTC phone. I have an old, I was just doing a lot of different experiments here. An iPhone 4S 32 gig could trade you up to $230. AT&T not version, not
yeah, so
bad.
This is a little different than the Motorola one. The Motorola one is pre-purchase. So basically they say, trade us your phone before the purchase. We'll give you a $100 discount off of your new Motorola device.
And apparently up this to $300 is the trade. So what are you looking for?
I'm Galaxy doing Nexus Samsung Verizon. Galaxy Nexus on Verizon. Fully functional, no liquid damage, no screen breakage, damaging or leakage. Submit $170 for my Verizon Galaxy Nexus, which has a decent amount of scratches on it. Okay. Which I don't know how they would back to that, but I'm sure they'd probably honor that. And this would be after the fact. So you've bought a new HTC phone, then you'd get this when you trade in your phone.
Yeah. What are they doing with the phones?
Well, that's a good question.
Right? Like, what is it? Like,
Gazelle?
I have no idea. Like, what is are they scrapping them for parts? Are they?
There's got to be some sort of
creating a super phone.
Buying you as a user for $170?
Yeah, that's kind of what it seems like. I mean, it's the same kind of thing that Motorola is trying to do, you know, on their side too. They want to keep you. They want to give you enough incentive that you'll stick with them.
Can we ask our friend at HTC what they're doing with the phones?
He's not there anymore.
He's a Samsung.
He's a Samsung now.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well,
maybe Michael Ludden.
Yeah,
he's with Samsung.
I can't keep
now.
Track. Everyone's moving.
I know.
Moving around. Can we ask our friend at Samsung what's the deal with the ads?
I bet we'd get a very
solid non-answer out of him.
Oh yeah,
if anything, I would. That would be my guess.
I grilled him last time he was on the show about a bunch of Samsung stuff, and
because it was right around the Samsung Apple patent trial stuff, and
well,
he was very.
I grilled him about that. I grilled him about other things like their stupid Samsung Beam phone.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, moving on.
All right.
Email.
Oh, that's me. Okay, so. Prathamesh, first name, sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry in advance. Hey, I just got a new company domain and email address powered with Gmail, but I can't find a way to transfer my app to my new Gmail ID. Please tell me how to transfer all my paid apps. I know you can't do this with the Apple App Store. Is there any way to do it in Google Play? I'm sorry to tell you that at this point in time, there is not an easy, well, there isn't a way that I know of actually at all, not easy or difficult to move your apps from one account to another. I just don't think it's possible.
I mean,
is kind of a way.
Oh, okay. Ooh, yes.
There we go.
I love this. All
Where
right.
Is it, Russell?
What's up?
It's not easy. You have to reach out to each developer individually and explain your situation and hope that they care.
Oh, so there's not a way, basically.
I mean, I ran into this problem when I first had my Nexus One, where I switched domain names and realized that I had spent $300 in apps over the last 2 years and just really had lost everything when I moved email addresses. So the guys from Google, the only suggestion that they had was that I reach out to each developer individually and ask them very, very nicely to give me basically a free app on this other account.
Oh,
and it was pretty bad. it took me about a month and a half, and I think I still lost about half of the apps.
Wow, yeah, that's a lot of work to go through. Potentially, if you buy a lot of apps, it's definitely a lot of work. You know, if you haven't purchased a lot of apps, then it might not be that big a deal.
Wait, if you purchase them, I can see why. And then you just have multiple that you have both accounts on the phone.
Yeah.
You know, to just keep the old account and download all the apps and then get rid of the account.
That's kind of what I was thinking on this is you don't really need to transfer it potentially unless you have to give up that account for some reason and you can never access it again. You can add multiple Gmail accounts to it and sync up all of those ads or the apps associated with those
and
accounts.
And this is a lesson why you should never pair your phone or something with a work address, with a work email address.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It might not work there forever.
Well, and before the Play app was the Play Store and it was the Android Market, there was this long period of time where it was really difficult to know which account you were purchasing apps under.
Yep.
You had to specifically think about it and select it to make sure. And through that, I ended up in the same boat. I ended up buying a few apps on my Twit account as opposed to my personal one and whatever. It wasn't
it
that
kind of makes
deal.
Me wonder as we do a lot of this stuff, what's going to happen when we got parents who are giving, the tablets and stuff for kids to use, and they're creating accounts for kids to use.
Mm-hmm.
Teenagers don't always make the best decision when it comes to creating usernames. what happens when you've got a bunch of apps, but then you go to your first job and your email address is,
something horrible.
Some terribly offensive name at Gmail.
It's not even teenagers. It's dumb, witty 20-somethings who make a Gmail account named after a character from a bad 80s movie, and now I'm stuck with it. And so whenever I go to a new job and they're like, oh, what's your IM name? I'm like, here, I'll email it to you. I don't want to talk about it. But yeah. So, and the thing is, I've thought about moving to a Ronexo or my name or something like that, but it's too much work, so it's fine. Yeah, so I stick with it. So.
You do?
Yeah, I do stick with it, yeah.
Wow.
Ducky from Pretty in Pink.
Yeah, that's
is that the name you're talking about? Ducky? Okay.
Ducky 444.
I don't know why I know that. No, yes, all right. All right, cool. Let's move into apps.
Google did a little bit of purchasing.
They did.
Over the
they
last opened couple up
their,
days.
Their purse
did a little shopping for Nick Software and the crown jewel in their sort of arsenal of apps is Snapseed. And I know there's a lot of you out there who could care less about filters, but honestly, Snapseed is one of the best iOS apps to do filtering, and I've been waiting
just
for
photo
it.
Editing in general.
Photo editing
right?
in general is great. There's cropping, there's tilt shift, there's everything in there. It's just really great. The tools are really awesome, and I had heard a long time ago that they were going to bring it to Android, and they hadn't yet, so maybe it'll finally happen. But they're going to use it on G+, probably.
Of course.
There's a lot of questioning about what's going to happen now to the app over there on the iOS world. And I don't really know. I just know that this, to me, seems like a good thing. But
I think it's great for the Google ecosystem.
Exactly.
And I wonder how much of this was triggered by the purchase of Instagram. And if you go back and look at how Google works, I mean, I remember back in the day, this is, 5, 6, 7 years ago, but we love these great, this online word processor, Writely or whatever, and then Google bought it, and now we use Google Docs. And it's using the technology that they bought from that purchase. We're seeing Google with Google Plus. Remember Google I.O. when they announced their events thing, and I leaned over to you. I go, they're aiming after Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And now if Facebook is going to step up their photos after the Instagram purchase, then Google's got to, it's keeping up with the Jones.
Apparently the company that is in San Diego is going to relocate to Mountain View and work at Google headquarters.
Cool.
So congrats to that company. It's a great app. And
yeah,
I really hope we get it on Android soon.
Yeah.
Because I want to do it on there.
I've never even really heard of it. They also do a lot of other
iOS,
things that aren't.
So you don't. Whoa. You've never heard of it before?
Man, I almost ejected out of my seat on that one.
Well, if you don't have the iOS.
So shocked.
If you don't have an iOS device, then you won't have heard of it because it's not on Android.
Well, and they do a lot of other filtering, I think, plugins and stuff outside of this app.
There's other apps,
Trey Ratcliffe, who does the
photo stuff.
Just a ton of photo stuff online and Google Plus and everything. He, his perspective is that's the bigger acquisition here. But it'll be interesting to see how Google kind of folds this into their own thing. So do you remember months ago we talked about a Kickstarter program called Chameleon?
Yes.
We talked about
Well,
first of all, Russell, do you remember this Chameleon thing?
Oh, yeah. I've used Chameleon a couple of times.
Were you in on the beta? Did you buy into the Kickstarter? Okay, so you've been using it for a while then.
I have.
Excellent. What do you think of it so far?
I think that it's really early, and it's going to take a lot of developer support in order for it to not feel quite so early.
And I will not pay the $10 yet.
Do you think it's worth the $10 purchase?
Well, and that's a really good question. This I'll back up. Chameleon is finally available for those that weren't on the Kickstarter. So you can get it at the Play Store for $10. The launcher for $10.26. You can go there and check it out. I did download it, and you know, just right before the show, so I've hardly
had
any chance to set up. I set up my home profile, and then of course, you know, I think over here is the work profile, and I haven't added anything to it yet. But yeah, I don't know. Great. Like, totally, only really spent like maybe 10 or 15 minutes with it. It does seem like, man, once they get a ton of widgets in there, you know, maybe it'll be a little bit more enjoyable. $10 really seems like a lot for this.
Well, and you lose.
Yes.
What you gain is some really cool stuff. It's all HTML5. So, you know, people who want to come in and add stuff from existing applications, it's supposed to be really simple to do so. But you lose every widget that Android makes, that the Android has available. You can't use any of them.
So you can use those or whatever developers create specifically for Chameleon.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you know, they're kind of nifty. Like when you pull them down, like if I did Instagram, you know, you can resize it and make it whatever size you want. Then, you know,
sync it's almost like widgets reimagined.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's almost just kind of like another launcher, really. You know what I mean? Like a lot of launchers allow you to do different things. I think Launcher Pro, if I remember in my gingerbread days, Launcher Pro is the one that I'd use, and they had specific widgets that you could only use inside Launcher Pro. So, I mean, it's kind of like that. The benefit with Launcher Pro or something along those lines that you don't get here is, like you said, Russell, you can't use any of the widgets or anything else, you know, that you have outside of Chameleon.
And Chameleon also has some really cool kind of context-based things that they can do with their launcher. I mean, you mentioned that they have like a work mode and a play mode.
Right.
But they can also, you can also set entirely different home screens to the time of day or, you know, if you're on GPS or you're on LTE, you can set a context. And so like if you're in the office, then you're using a different one, but it'll make those changes automatically.
Right. Yeah, right, exactly. It senses where you are and launches what...
But again, yeah. I mean, and I get adding value, giving value to the Kickstarter backers, but I'd be really curious to see what their pricing strategy was around this, because if the idea was to make it $10 to, you know, make the Kickstarter people feel as if they got something special, that's a little lame. I think $10 for a bunch of really cool widgets and a home screen is too much. I mean, if that was $4.99, I would consider it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think some of the more expensive... Well, except for Shell 3D, whatever the one that was, is $20, are around $4.99.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So there you go. Chameleon. We talked about it. We've updated on it. It'll
Thanks
be interesting
for getting
to see.
It, Jason.
Well, you know, I felt like we had it on the show, so one of us has to get in and talk about it. And you know, I'm happy I have it because I'll check in on it over time. Yeah. It was kind of it was interesting to see it evolve from a Kickstarter project that everybody freaked out about, and to see where it's gonna head.
Cool. So speaking of other anticipated applications on Android, looks like some more things that we've been waiting for are coming to fruition. Carbon, which has been a hotly anticipated Twitter client.
I've been told this is the Holy Grail.
I've been told.
The Holy Grail.
I've been told.
I have no idea.
Heard just it here wait first. For this.
It's potentially days away, according to its developers. Apparently, there was a tweet from the Carbon for Android account that said, a matter of a few days with a Z. It's still alive and kicking. Next up will be a full video in our Google Play link. So if you're waiting for the holy grail of Twitter apps, Carbon, follow their Twitter account and you can see it.
And who told me I should be waiting for this is Phil Nickinson, who's on that photo right there from Android Central. He said, because I've been complaining, you guys know I've been complaining about Twitter apps on Android. And he said, this is probably the one that you want.
Yep.
I said, all right. Well, I'm waiting.
So, I mean, okay, it might be, but will they be capped at the 100,000 limit that Twitter puts? I mean, they will.
Yeah.
Has that started already?
Yeah, I believe that's started. That's in full effect. I mean, if your client wasn't launched, you get 100,000 unless you make a deal with them. So, be interesting.
It's weird how that's going to work, maybe, because Carbon's actually an extension of the original Carbon that was for WebOS. So depending on if they were able to keep their registration tag for Twitter, Carbon's been around for a really long time.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good point.
Maybe they could increase on top of their already existing user base.
So we'll see. So stay tuned to their Twitter account. Additionally, for you gamers, Rovio, who we all know from Angry Birds fame, has started showing the first gameplay footage of their new game, Bad Piggies. Which
looks kind of cool, I gotta say.
Which is picking up from the Angry Birds verse. We'll take a look at some of this footage here.
Yeah, maybe skip forward about a third of the way through on that, Brian. Then you
so
start to get to the actual.
So we've got the piggies acting out and fighting back, huh? Is that the point of this?
Yeah, so the point of it, from what I can tell, you'll see it here in a few seconds, is you actually build your vehicle and then try and get it to maneuver through the scenario.
Oh, they're not going after the birds.
No.
This is just their own world.
Yeah, so you actually construct your vehicle, right?
That's cool.
And then you use that vehicle to hopefully propel you through the land.
That's very
cool. The layout
cool.
of the land.
Rovio,
it almost looks a little too... I think I would be very bad at this game.
You think?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'd be bad at it.
Ooh,
yeah.
Okay, and then you fly, and then you... Okay.
Yeah, but it all looks right. cool. Like, it doesn't look at all like Angry Birds.
Yeah, which is what they need to know. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
but with the same kind of the same look and feel, the cartooning, yeah. and the you know, familiar characters to keep the franchise alive, but they've got to innovate, and this looks like what they're doing, so...
Yeah. Ooh, I'm so buying Bad Piggies.
Yeah.
Rock on. All right,
uh-oh, you're going to arena cool. it, aren't you?
I never did. You know what? I never did Angry Birds Space.
I feel like anything, but I feel like it's...
It's obvious. Yeah.
Anyway, and then the last app that I've greatly been anticipating, which I just discovered is now available for Android. It's been available for iOS, but it's an app called Lyft, L-Y-F-T. And it's, for those of you who heard me talk about using Uber, which is a cab replacement, Lyft is a on-demand ride sharing, which is really, really cool. And it's, I don't know what other cities other than San Francisco it's present in, but if it's in your city, definitely check it out because it's cheaper and easier to use than a cab. So Lyft is awesome. So it's finally out for Android. I'm very excited. So
sweet.
Cool.
Lyft.
Lyft.
I know. Yeah. Just wanted to say that.
Just wanted to mess with you.
I want to mess with you. Throw some salt in the wound that didn't exist. I don't know. Whatever. You got the email.
I do have the email. So we got another email. This one comes in from Mark Lastwica, who writes in and says, I was watching episode 76 of All About Android and noticed that you showcased the Ultimate Rotation Control app in the arena. The Ultimate Rotation Control app. I also wanted to let you know that it's amazingly useful for Google TV. If you sideload apps onto the Google TV, Songs of being a good example, they will try and go into portrait mode for some reason. This gives you a pretty undesirable effect. The way to correct this is to use Ultimate Rotation Control to force the Google TV to play all apps in landscape mode so you never run into that problem. Just want to give you a heads up. Hope that helped. Thank you, Mark. That's awesome. So if you are sideloading apps onto your Google TV and you want them, the reason why it's snapping into portrait mode is because you're using apps that really aren't designed for Google TV, for a TV landscape thing. They're designed for the phone, so that's why it's snapping to portrait. So another reason why Ultimate Rotation Control possibly might be the greatest app ever made.
Still fighting for it, aren't you?
It's a great app, but come on, Ron. Well, the greatest app ever made.
We can answer that,
We can. I know. Yeah,
we're going to answer that.
We're going to answer it exactly. I like hyperbole.
This I know about you.
Yeah.
All right. In fact, let's answer it. Let's get into the arena.
Two enter, one lives. Android Arena.
Have a comeback.
I mean, how many times have you said the greatest app ever made? Maybe the Uniqlo app, maybe whatever clock app you did or travel app that you've done before.
Is it
every
just the current
app
one
to
is?
Run is the greatest app ever made.
I like how you thought of a comeback 2 minutes later.
I know.
That was adorable. So it was great.
So getting this one
I'm
in there.
So not like, so I'm such a fighter.
Oh, I thought of a comeback.
I got a comeback, everybody. And then I announced it like a weirdo.
Listen.
Well, let's see. Is it the ultimate app ever?
I thought I had it in the bag.
Yeah, I kind of thought you did too. Yeah. It turns out, look out, ad network detector. No, totally not. I totally completely lost. But Scope did win. Joe Braidwood's app from last week, Scope, wins with 34% of the votes.
He had it in the bag when he said Android only. Also, I have to say I used it, and it is pretty good. The only pain about it, I think, is just there's a few... issues that I have with Scope, which is just sort of like tap to jump to the top is a pain, and if you haven't used it for a long time, but it's a really nice and elegantly made Android only app, right?
And we noticed that Ultimate Rotation Control came in second.
Yes, it did. Second. It was a close poll
China
between
loves
the two.
It,
China loves
Ultimate Rotation Control, and so does Brazil and Australia.
Do you know why Brazil likes Ultimate Rotation Control? Because it's a sexy app. And in Brazil, they like the sexy. So,
well, Canadians obviously need their privacy, so that's why they voted for my app.
And Mexico needs the Lookout Ad Network Detector because
So does I guess that's
map.
It. Right?
The map is always fun.
Great. So, just a real quick recap: scope 34%, ultimate rotation control second at 29%, app lock third place 21%, and my Lookout Ad Network Detector. It's just not, it's just, as you say, Ron, it's not very sexy.
Yeah, like, it's not the sexy app. You do
but
not
it's
bring
got
the sexy
some really interesting stuff to tell you. And that's at 16%. All right. I'm not looking back. I'm just looking forward here.
In Brazil, we like the sexy app.
It turns out that I lost, so that means I go first.
Who has the sexy app of the week? Who's got it?
Oh, well, then I'm going to have to change my app.
I just changed the whole arena. It's changing the game.
That is
sexy app.
Scary. Okay. My app is not sexy in any way, but it's a nice app. It's called Lux Auto Brightness. There's no ultimate in there, I realize, but there is a free version as well as a paid version, $2.29.
It's got the letter X in it. That's sexy.
I suppose so, Ron.
Oh, we clearly lost it. Sorry, Jason.
Reel it in. So Lux Auto Brightness attempts to give you ultimate control. See what I did there? Over your brightness settings. And I've noticed, I've run a lot of ROMs on different phones or whatever, and the automatic brightness settings, even on just manufacturer, Samsung phones that I get to review or whatever, if you put it on automatic, you never really know what you're going to get. A lot of times it's just, it's overdone and it's overblown, and they take the low and make it too low, and they take the high and they make it too high. Well, Lux Auto Brightness aims to give you full control over that. So what you have here, this is just kind of the welcome screen. It gives you a little tour because it's a little complicated when you first open the app and try and think about the controls that you have here. So you can take the tour and it'll give you kind of a step-by-step description of what you have. But if you start the settings wizard, it gives you everything, in a little bit more easy to use layout. Right now I have it on periodic, and essentially what periodic is it sets an interval, I believe it's of 5 seconds that it samples from your lighting sensor to see what the current lux brightness value is coming in over that. And based on that, it'll scale your brightness. There's also dynamic that I think that might be more rapid. On wake is any time you turn on your screen, it takes a sample of the brightness. And then disabled, of course, is disabled. But so periodic, I can set any number of refresh values on here. I think I have it set to 5, but you probably save your battery if you set it a little bit lower or a little bit longer than that, to like 30. It just won't happen as quickly. Full backlight when plugged in. I always like to have that when I'm charging my device. I like it to go for my screen to go full brightness. So you can do that with this app. Show a persistent notification. I'm going to give away one of the later apps by doing this. I'm sorry, but no, I guess I'm not. There it is, down at the bottom. Backlight, 61%. It just revised itself, made an update to 66%. So I always have that notification in my drawer if I want it. That's kind of nice. Fade brightness change. This is kind of cool because instead of just making a snap change or whatever, it's got a nice gradual curve that it changes between these different settings. There's also a widget that I'll show you in a second, and it allows you to do a few things. If you click it, you can basically just tell it, do I want to adjust my brightness based on what the setting is now, or do I want to open the dashboard, whatever. And there, you're done. And so it's all set up. And so the widget is right there. Right now it's set on auto, and essentially what I've done is you are motivated or I think the first thing I thought of when I was using this app was, I'm going to set a bunch of different profiles. I'm going to set my darkness profile. So when it's really dark, I want it to be, this brightness, or, because it doesn't have to be as bright. Hey, there you go.
Oh, I was like, that's weird.
That is weird. So I'm controlling the lights in the studio with my phone. Isn't that cool? So you could basically set all of these different points into the settings. There's this little link button right here. So if I wanted to say, so turn those lights even further off. Yeah, further off. And I think, let's see here. What do we have here? I want it to refresh. Let's see here. Okay, so it's at 10 lux, essentially. And so I could say at 10 lux, I want it to be this bright.
and then I could hit this link button. I'll hold it down, apparently. And so basically what I've said is I've set kind of a point in my scale. At 10 lux, this is the percentage that it goes. If it was really bright in here, wow, thank you, Brian. This is great. I could, let's see here. So now that's updated, 932 lux. And I could say, when it's really bright, I want it to be as bright as possible, and I hold it down. So essentially, you're creating a scale between points. You could get really granular with this and set a bunch of different points, but even they state the desire to set many, many points is only going to hinder performance. So it's probably best, in my experience, is best to kind of set what you want it to be when it's really bright, what you want it to be when it's moderately bright, and what you want it to be when it's dark, or at the very least, really bright and really dark. And then it scales all the way in between that. And I think that the reason that I'm attracted to this is because, like I said, a lot of times the automatic brightness scaling that they do is really just a couple of steps. You know, it's like either really dark or really bright. And this allows you to scale all the way through it based on the wide arrangement of lux settings, lux values anyways. It also has a few other things you get if you're a paid app purchaser. You get things like astronomer mode, if that's important to you. So when you're out, you know, looking at stars, you can set it on astronomer mode. If I hold it down, you get night mode, and I'm not really entirely sure how that's different from it changes the oh, thanks. Wow, I love that the lights in here just change as I need them to. So let's see here. So there's astronomer mode, there's normal, and there's night. I'm not really quite, I don't know if I understand night, but there it is. Anyways, and there's a bunch of other settings in here to protect you against jitter, as they call it. So if you have a low-performing or a low-quality light sensor, there are ways to set manual tweaks around it so that it's a little more accurate. And with a paid version, you can also use, if you want to, I would imagine it's a hit to your battery, but you could use your camera to detect kind of that light as well, in combination with the front to get more accurate. That's a little too geeky for my... I don't know why you would ever want to do that. Hey, it's a feature really that was probably asked for, so someone has a use for it. But, and it's just kind of a nice-looking app. It kind of runs in the background, and you don't even really know it's there once you've kind of have it set up. And if you really want to change it, you can use this widget to kind of, you know, switch between things and launch the app. But it is called Lux Auto Brightness. If auto brightness is kind of something that you're struggling with, this might help you. Free version does a lot. It's just kind of limited in a few things. You can check out their page to see what it's limited in. But the pro version is just $229. So I like it a lot. Check it out. That's that. All right, Eileen, your turn.
Hello, everybody.
Welcome.
I like gesture apps. I was trying to find the name of the app that I no longer use, unfortunately. But do you remember that app where I would just sort of like wave my hand over the sensor here on the phone or on the tablet, and then it would skip tracks? I don't really use it anymore, only because I've been switching phones all... You know when you switch phones and then you just forget about certain apps? You have the essentials?
Yeah.
And then I was just looking for it because I know I own it because I paid for the paid version, and I can't find the name of the app, but maybe somebody can help me recall what that is. Today's app is a similar sort of gesture app. It is free in the Android App Store. It is called TipSkip. And essentially what it does, it works with Google Play. It works with Double Twist. I haven't tried it on any other music application except for Amazon and Audio, and it doesn't work with those two apps. Essentially, I know, it's very confusing. Like, what does it work with? It must work with, like, Songbird and Winamp. I don't have those. I just have Double Twist, and I know for sure it works with Google Play. So, essentially, TipSkip, let me launch it first. You'll see it in your notification drawer as well. All you do is, once you enable it, turn it on. If I can turn it on. Hello. TipSkip. Turn. Oh, there we go. It's on. And then it'll say in the app drawer that it's on. It's running in the background. And once you launch a app, which has to be Google Play or Double Twist, as far as I know. What's going on with my demo today? and you play. You can see all my terrible music. All you do is you kind of tap it in the back. To double tap for the next song.
You punched it.
I know, I punched it. Triple to go back. One, two, three. And four, one, two, three, four, to pause. That's what it is. So imagine if you are, I love gesture apps. Imagine if you've got this and you've, and it also does it when the screen is black. You can do that while it's playing.
So what does one tap do?
Well, I don't think I have that enabled. Essentially, let me show you the different taps that you can have. So if I go into my settings, what's wrong with my hands today? You can have this, you could change the sensitivity control. So essentially, if I put it on the table and I go one, two, and I don't mean to, it's going to skip. So there are different actions here. You can have it. Two knock means to turn it off. The default is to have two knocks is next, three knocks is the previous track, and then four knocks is player pause. But you can change that around. You can have it turn off or stop, you know, your music. I don't know. I found it kind of cool. Kind of interesting. I like things like this where people are trying gestures and they're trying to I know I really see hit it hard.
Yeah.
I like to see what they can come up with. I mean, I know I had the one where I kind of just did the wave, but that had some issues.
Can you try
too.
It where it's just a tap, where you do a light tap? Because I know you were doing it hard so we could hear the.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but what would the? I'm just curious. I mean, like if
all
you
right.
were just like, boop, you know,
all right, let's see.
You gave it a little nudge,
just a little light.
Little Yeah,
okay,
little.
Hold on.
Pat.
How Pat?
There you go.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, cool. All
okay,
right,
should
cool.
I put it on the table? Oh. Let's see if I do this. Oh, oh. See? That was so
yeah.
fast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no.
That's cool.
Take that.
Quick.
There, I turned it off.
Ringo song, get it off. Stop.
So that's Chip Skip. It's free. It works on both your phones and tablets. And it's beta, so let them know. It's from Busy Bytes. If you get the, let's see. Let's see. Hold on. Yay!
That's
okay.
Cool.
So if you get the app and you have suggestions, they want to know. They want some information. I just, you know, I thought it was an interesting concept, and I'm always looking for something
yeah.
different.
It's the clapper.
Yeah.
It is the
yeah.
clapper. It's
yeah,
the clapper
it's the
of yeah. I've got on 100% sensitivity right now, so if I just drop,
no wonder,
this, it's
yeah,
you go crazy. But yeah, it is the clapper
yeah.
for music on your device.
Clap on the back to skip the track.
That's right.
Yeah, I like
very
it.
Cool.
You're like conk conk. All right. Anyway, tip skip free in the Android marketplace.
Free.
All right.
Nice.
Cool. Well, Russell, you have an app. I actually have it installed. So why don't you go ahead and talk about it, and I'll try and keep up.
I started installing this on everything, especially when 4.1 started rolling out. It's battery widget reborn, and basically it takes the existing battery stats and just applies a lot more information. You can have, as you've got there, just the regular widget on the screen that tells you what your battery percentage is, and when you open the application, it gives you, extended information. You can go to battery usage, and it'll tell you the temperature of the battery. And just really break it down. And this is just giving you a kind of basic battery information. But it takes all this information. There you go. It gives you a lot more information, specifically, you know, when you were having the battery drop down. It applies a timestamp, which the existing battery setup for Jelly Bean doesn't really do. But it gives you a lot more information, gives you a lot more control, and it takes this information and embeds it in the drawer as well. So your notification drawer has got this information set up here, and it's Jelly Bean, so you can actually two-finger scroll
so
it up when you're not using
that.
It.
I like that it's called Reborn.
Yeah, and it gives you the empty in 10 hours and 18 minutes. It gives you a lot of really quick glance information. It's just a lot of kind of... just granular information that's not ordinarily available.
This would have been great, Jason, when you're having the battery drain problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So does, because this is running, well, this is doing more than obviously it would if it wasn't running. Does it ever hit the battery? Like, does it ever do the opposite thing and like have a negative impact on the battery because it's monitoring this stuff all the time? Or is this kind of data being collected regardless?
All of this is information that's already there. If you were to install something that would give you the access to the temperature controls and stuff like that, that's all information that the underlying system is already collecting.
Right. Okay, so it's just laying it out in a in an easier way. And then, I mean, obviously, having it in the notification bar, that's really cool.
It's really great on phones, and on the Nexus 7, it looks really nice as well.
Nice. The empty in 10 hours and 18 minutes. When I first installed this, and after like 20 minutes, it was like empty in 1 hour, and I had like half of my battery left. I was like, oh, wow, I hope that changes. Thankfully, it did. This seems a little bit more realistic. I think it just needed time to kind of collect some of the data since I had installed it. No, this is really cool, and I love the Holo kind of approach with it, obviously. Now, what version and up? Is it only Jelly Bean, or is it before Jelly Bean?
The application runs, I think, on 2.3 and higher.
Yeah, it does.
But all the you know, Jelly Bean optimization stuff obviously only works there.
Right. Cool. Yeah. That's great. That is Battery Widget Reborn in beta right now. They say on the Play Store entry. So check it out while it's free. It's probably, I would imagine, once it's out of beta, they'll have a paid for version of it.
I think that's a sexy app. I downloaded it.
There you go.
I'm totally going to download that.
Totally downloading it.
It's got punctuation in the title.
I know. Totally.
I know.
Battery
sexy.
Widget. Reborn. That's sexy. Yeah. Brazil, they're going to love it. Listen, Brazil, I'm on to you. All right. So my app, actually a little bit of an anecdote here. I was telling Eileen on the way up to Petaluma about this. Those of you who follow me on Twitter this past weekend, you might have saw that I ran a running race. I ran a 5K on Sunday, the San Francisco Giants themed one, as I'm off to do about once a year. I'm trying to do more. But I like to go running. I go outside running at least. You know, I try to go as much as often as I can. And one of my friends last week was posted on Twitter at me saying, hey, what running app do you use? And I sat there, I looked at the screen, and I said, ironically, none. So I said it was a good opportunity to put my money where my mouth was. I had a race coming up. Co-host the show about Android and apps. So I said, let me see what's out there. And I settled on Runtastic, which is not a unheard of app. It's pretty well known. It's available on iOS. It is also available on Android. It's been around for a while. And I downloaded the free version to start just because I was kind of giving a sample. There is a pro version that is $3.99, which I thought was a little pricey. That's why I didn't take the jump. But after using it, now I see all the functionality that it does provide. It's going to be kind of hard to demo here because I'm not going to go running, and nobody wants to see that, really, let's be honest. But I can show you the interface, and then maybe we can show some of the video from the Google Play Store. But so when you open up the app, basically you've got to create an account. It does use Facebook, so if you're Facebook wary, be warned. There's Facebook Connect in there, but I think you can just set up an account with your email address, so you don't have to use Facebook. but when you open up the app, this is on the main kind of screen, and it gives you the current kind of what you're doing. Right now, there's zero because nothing's happening. But real simple, that if you're going to – you tell it some information, how much you weigh, your height. And then you tell it what you're doing. So for here, you can change the workout. You know, I've got a basic workout. You can set a workout goal or some sort of manual entry. I'm just going to leave it on basic workout. And you tell it what you're doing. And there's running, and you could change it to aerobics or badminton or basketball. There's a whole bunch of different kind of sports in here. So you can be specific about what you're exactly doing, whether the elliptical or cycling or that sort of thing. I've only used it for running so far, so I'm going to leave it on running. And then once you press start workout, it just starts keeping track of your duration. It keeps track of your distance. It uses the GPS to track you on a map. It also keeps track of your pace and does all that kind of math. That's stuff that you don't want to do in your head. For me, it was real simple that this little music icon pops me over to Google Music, so Google Play. So I was able to queue up my mix and put on my 5K race mix and get it done. And then go back to the app so I can control music from there. It does have, when you launch it, it puts a little thing in the notification so you can get right to it. It does have voice control. So every time I hit a mile, it would dim the music and then it would say, 1 mile, your current pace is blah, blah, blah. So pretty neat in that regard, in that it really integrates with the speaker. Nice GPS integration to track what you're doing. Now over here, if we want to pop back to the demo thing, I can show you in the history. So it keeps track of the race, and this is the last run that I did on Sunday. And I can see a whole bunch of data about it afterwards. Now it was a it was a 5K, and I did do it in about 26 minutes, but I forgot to turn the app off because I was so winded. So it actually says the duration was 40 minutes because I was like, oh, I've got this app. But what it does is it keeps track of how far you ran. It tells you your average pace, your average speed, keeps track of the elevation. But then there's a whole bunch of other stuff. So you've got – you can split out a table of your pace by mile. So it says here my best mile was mile number 2, where I was running a 7:59 mile. It can graph out a bunch of times, so you can map out your pace versus, you know, and your speed, and factor in the elevation or your heart rate if you're doing that. So it's got nice, you know, pretty cool integration. It keeps track of a map, so you can see that's the route I ran along the Embarcadero in San Francisco. And it's just a bunch of neat little functionality right out of the box that's totally free. So now the question is it worth it to go pro? Is it worth it for the $399? That does unlock a bunch of stuff. So if we go up here, you can see all the things. It can keep the voice feedback, giving you like a coach, somebody egging you on, keeping you go the whole time. For me, on the free version, that stopped after 2 miles. I'm not sure how much of a fan I am of that. But you can track your races live, so you can live stream your race so people can follow along on Facebook or on the web. It can track your heart rate zones. It can do geotagging. And then it's got this Google Earth view that where you can that we were seeing there in the video just now, where you can track your race on Google Earth, which is pretty cool. So it was a neat, you know, like as someone who runs but never uses apps to track my races or track my runs, it was pretty cool to play with. And I think I'm going to keep using it just to kind of build up some data and see how it goes. I might actually go up to the pro version. So
sweet.
How much is the pro version again?
$399.
Okay.
But you get a lot of functionality for $399. So there you go.
Awesome. Runtastic.
Yeah.
No zombies chasing you in Runtastic, right?
No zombies chasing you. Yeah, there's no
that should be a feature.
Mode.
Yeah. That's yeah. Probably working on that.
Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah.
Okay. all right. So four excellent apps this week. I think this was a great arena. Lux Auto Brightness, Tip Skip, Battery Widget, Reborn, and Runtastic.
Reborn is the best name ever.
Yes. You can vote for your favorite app this week by going to bit.ly/AAApoll77. bit.ly/AAApoll77. And let us know which is your favorite app this week.
I'm going to make an early prediction that Battery Widget Reborn.
Did I not tell you that it was sexy? Yeah. I knew it sexy. Already. I know it's sexy when
app,
I download it during the show.
That
I'm
is
actually
the sexy
playing
app. I'm installing
with
it
right now.
I'm literally installing it.
And I'm always really happy when I see an app come out that actually utilizes the Jelly Bean notification thing. Yeah. That does it really
yes.
well as well.
Oh, yes. That's what I love about it the most.
A random complaint about the Google Play Store is that when I love to install apps from the Google Play Store on the web, and you do the drop down, it shows you what devices. And now, admittedly, I'm lucky I've got multiple devices.
Right.
But like, I wanted to install this on all my devices, but you've got to do it individually.
Individually.
Oh, interesting.
I'm installing it on my phone and on my Nexus 7. So thank you, Russell.
Boom.
I owe you a debt of thanks to help me track my battery performance.
Yeah, and it's doing well, 62% of the votes right now, but you never know. There's plenty of time. This could change at any moment. What is that?
I just found an app, and the recommended app when I installed Battery Widget Reborn was an app called Is It August? And the description is, ever been stuck wondering whether or not it's August and unable to work it out?
Huh.
In the past, one would have had to go to isitaugust.com, but for those on the grow without an internet connection,
like,
it's very difficult, but not to worry. With this app, you can check.
5,000 installs.
And it just says yes or no.
What's so important about August? Why?
What kills me is the installs.
It's got 5,000 installs, and it came out in March 2001. Damn, that's my next arena, and I blew it. There it is. Is it August? Look at the screenshot. No.
Well, it's not a very good app if it actually was August
was
when they took the screenshot.
By people.
Interesting.
The battery.
What I love is the reviews.
Remarkably brilliant. Excellent.
Best thing that's ever happened to me, says Steven.
These are recent too, and they're in August.
The world has been waiting for this. Somebody with a Galaxy S3. Remarkably brilliant.
Got 101
5-star. You know what? This is the best. We got to read all these reviews. Oh, whoops. Revolutionary.
Like Nelson
Yeah. Nelson Mandela weighing in on it as well.
Oh,
I mean, it's an
gosh.
Important app. We don't want to underscore.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I felt as if that was breaking news. I felt as if really the Is It August app was breaking. So.
Excellent. All right. Phew, this just in, it is not August.
It is not August anymore.
No. I love this.
Ron, you have to download it. Now that you've talked about it,
This review from Henry on July 31st, 2012 said, I often find myself confused regarding whether it's August or not. With this app, no longer.
Yeah, you really should have held on to that for an arena. That was a guaranteed win.
That's great.
Dang
that's great.
It.
You gotta keep those bottles next time.
And here's the sexiest app ever.
Here's an opposite side of the spectrum. Ankit says, WTF, it just shows a big no on the screen and nothing else. What's so special about this?
I didn't get it.
All right, sorry.
All right. Well, next week we have a pretty great guest as well. Aaron Newcomb joins us again. He actually has the Vizio CoStar, so he's going to bring it in. We'll hook it up, do a little review of that. I'm very curious to see.
I will be here. Yes.
Are you going to be here?
Thank God.
Okay, good.
No, I will be here.
Right. Okay. So that's next week's awesome guest. But I have to thank you, Russell Hawley, this week's awesome guest.
Yeah, Russell, you're awesome.
Yeah, really appreciate you joining us today. It was awesome.
Thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you bet. We'll definitely extend the invite your way again. And if you are able, we'd love to have you back. Your mobile editor at geek.com. This is your chance to kind of plug and promote whatever you would like. So go for it.
I'm pretty much always online social networks, at Russell Hawley on Twitter. I really am just a mobile writer. I just, you know, anytime there's some fun stuff going on, you know, I'll be talking about it.
Cool. Yeah. And you're very active on Google Plus as well. I'm always really impressed by the amount of Android kind of conversation that happens in Google Plus. It's like one of my absolute go-to places to kind of be in a direct conversation with so many people that are just so intrinsically kind of involved in the Android community. It's great.
It's definitely a passionate group. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks again, Russell. We really appreciate having you on. Ron, your turn.
Plug away. Just go to about.me/RonXO, and you can find all links to my Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus and all the fun stuff, as well as links to my day job over at Graphically and iFanboy.com, and where you can argue over what your favorite comic book character is when you get tired of arguing over what your favorite porn is.
You can be a fanboy over there.
Yeah, exactly.
You're a fanboy.
Hey, yeah, it's fine.
That makes sense.
More traffic for me.
All right. And Eileen?
You can find me on about.me/EileenRose or on Twitter at Eileen TV. These are the best reviews ever of Is It August?
It's a gold mine.
I'm just really curious if the developers created the other 11 apps that
are
required.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
I want to know if it's December, okay?
Yes. See?
Joel Anderson. We should get him on the show.
All right. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Jason Howell, or you can go to about.me/Jason Howell and find all the different places that I'm at. But that is it for this week, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in. Leave us a voicemail if you have a chance. We are at 347-SHOW-AAA. You can always send us an email or a video link as part of the email at aaa@twit.tv. Hit the show up on Twitter at Android Show. Show notes can be found at twit.tv/AAA, as well as past episodes on our site, iTunes, YouTube. And finally, catch us live every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. Thanks so much for joining us this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.